it was really valuable to the community members as well as the customers to have that regular touch point, because it was such a recurring feedback loop. We'd take what the customers had told us, we'd improve things, we'd share that back with the customers, and then share that with the community, and then we'd learn the next thing, and hopefully things got easier in the first place. So you want to make sure that that is all set up and ready to go. And then you want to open up some time in your calendar and get talking to people one-on-one, and making sure that you can build a decent rapport and build some trust with them so that they can share their challenges and their successes with you, and to go and achieve the business outcomes that they want. So yeah, making sure that you have the correct data set up, I think, is absolutely vital to having a good customer success department, for sure.
Welcome to the API Detox podcast. My guest today is Charlie Edwards, and warmest welcome to Charlie. Hi.
Hi, Lauren. Great to be here. Really excited.
Why is Charlie here? I know Charlie since 2019. I think the first time ever we met was in Tokyo, of all places. Although I live in Belgium and Charlie, you were from the UK, so that was not so straightforward. And we met there because you were representing Hopi as a client relations executive there at DevRelCon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Worked for Hopi for almost 2 years. And doing the conference tours was a big part of the role. We hosted the DevRelCon series. And yeah, we were over in Japan for our Tokyo edition. And it was lovely to meet you and all the other conference goers there to learn more about the DevRel field. And certainly with the Asian spin on it, it was really fun.
And then the most recently we have met in London at API Days, and you were telling me that you are changing some things in your career, but that you are staying in a very customer-close, customer-relationship, customer-representation inwards towards the company role. And I said, well, then let's talk about this. What does customer success, customer interests, where does it play together with API documentation? And you also talked about how you have set up, but this we're going to come back to later in detail, how you have set up a full customer success coordination program in a startup company, if I remember correctly. And that was a very interesting thing, the process of this, of, oh, you come to a company, you're employee number 12, and you have to set up this entire process yourself. That's fascinating, especially if we add that you know how this plays with the documentation folks, product, marketing, how do people dance together when it's new? So this is why I invited you. We might start talking about other things because you have seen so many portals, so many projects. But let's start here.
Sure. Yeah. That was it was a very daunting task. Yeah. My first foray into customer success was at Garden.io. They're a automation platform that streamlines the build, test, and deploy processes in containerized environments. So it was a pretty technical product. As you said, then I was employee number 12, the only customer success hire for quite a bit of time in Garden. And I guess my most important part of what I did there was sort of forge the links between the different departments within there that were also in their own sort of fledgling stages, with product, with sales, with marketing, and with support as well, and to try and give the customer a valuable experience from their purchase in the tool, because they had an open source tier as well, and then the purchase tier would add on more features along with that. So we wanted to make sure the customers were getting the most out of what they were buying. And so I started the initial process of gathering customer feedback was the main priority, and building out the integration of the tool into their stack, and figuring out how best to use that, and then feeding that information back into the other departments. So I would feed it back to sales so that they could reach out to other potential customers more effectively, other community members, and to marketing for sort of distributing case studies, which would also then get fed back into the documentation, so that other community members could see themselves in a variety of different use cases that they may not have thought that Garden would have applied to without that that step in the journey, and yeah, back to product ultimately to feed in and improve the tool, highlight anything in the documentation that was contradictory or anything like that, and or misleading or confusing. So yeah, we a big part of what I did was have that regular touch point with our customers and gather as much information as I could and feed that back out to the other teams, and yeah, while also trying to sort of progress them along the integration of the tool at the same time.
And as a context, all of this happened during, I guess, the harshest lockdowns, and this job is in Berlin. I guess you stayed in the UK, so your relationship building superpowers probably came in handy at this point.
Yeah, it was an interesting start of the job. I'd probably say it was towards the tail end of the lockdown, so it was still pretty difficult in terms of that, but I was able to get out and meet the team a little bit more often once things started to open up after about a few months in the role. So it certainly wasn't the depths of it, but yeah, it was difficult, and relationship building there was really important, not only with my colleagues in the team, but also with my customers as well. And yeah, they were quite internationally diverse. Let's say that we had some over in the States, we had a few in Europe as well, and they were all quite distant from each other. It was quite a challenge to collaborate with them, and probably it missed out on a lot of the elements of you know, in-person workshops and the get to know you in office visits and all that sort of thing. That was probably what was missing there. But yeah, the building the relationships is the core of customer success, I believe. And because, you know, internally, that brings a lot of value that you can lean on other departments for what you need. In customer success, we're not really a technical team. So it was really important for me to forge relationships with the product and support teams so that I could have the technical resources to guide customers through difficult onboarding segments or to integrate the tool in slightly unusual ways and with a lot of legacy tech, that kind of thing. So yeah, not only was it internally important, but externally as well, to make sure that the customers felt like they could trust us and trust me with the challenges that they were facing, and be open and transparent about what was going on with them and where they wanted to be ultimately. Because as I say, we're not a technical team, so we focus on the business outcomes as well, and we have to recognize that the technology that we implement has a sort of transformative or has the potential to be a transformative process for an entire business. So that was predominantly our focus there.
Backpedaling a little bit, how would you say, apart from the obvious where are your fingers on the technical parts or not, what would you say is the, I don't know, mindset, identity difference between a developer relations professional and someone who says, I represent customer success? What's the elemental difference in the mindset?
I mean, we do perform a lot of similar functions. You're quite right to sort of call out what the differences might be. In my opinion, I would say that a developer relations professional is more community leaning, and I guess has a lot more no strings obligations to a community, and offers that service to make it an easy transition to using the product in the end. And it's very similar to what customer success does, because we try and assure that our customers get the most value out of their purchases as well. Yeah, I suppose we would, during my days at Garden, I would work very closely with community and figuring out the learnings from our conversations with more customers. I mean, in customer success, it's in the title, we wouldn't normally interact directly with community members and certainly those on our unpaid tiers. But there was certainly a lot that we could pick up from our interactions with customers that would be valuable to a wider community and help bring more business on board as well. Yeah, it's a very similar kind of relationship with our various audiences, I guess.
You would almost need the same skills, but applied differently.
Yes, yeah, I would agree. There's certainly very similar disciplines. I mean, like, you know, the relationship building that we discussed, hugely important. Sort of being able to translate different requirements from different teams, very important to both roles. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap with between the two disciplines. And both of our learnings that we figure out from talking to our customers and talking to our community members will all get fed back into product at the end of the day. So yeah, very, very similar stories there.
If I have, for one reason or another, naively pointed out this similarity, Have you been in a situation where in the company there was both somebody wearing the DevRel hat or more, let's say, developer evangelist hat, and somebody separate wearing customer success hat, and both of them having a touch point with community? How do people in the company know whom do I contact for what and like who's who?
Yeah, sure. That's I guess it's it was a difficult blend for me at first because I did wear both hats in the early days there. So as well as having those regular touch points with customers, I would also organize weekly webinars or community office hours in this particular instance, where we would get some of our team in to talk around particular topics and particular ways of using the tool that would we'd aim to sort of get that community outreach, and we'd invite our customers along as well. And our customers were often, you know, some of the more it was a bi-directional webinar, so we would have our community and our customer members talking on the call as well. And our customers would often be some of the most vocal about it. Understandably, they're the ones who have made the financial commitment, I suppose. But it allowed a community member to be able to see what sort of challenges, what sort of benefits are being brought up by using the tool. And having that relationship with both sides of the coin there really, I think, added something quite different to our particular outreach as well. And we would use those for marketing as well. We'd upload those to YouTube, and they get fed back into our use cases, our success stories, and our documentation as well. So
now we're on topic. Okay. You said it. So let's zoom in on that, on the documentation and maybe marketing part. So all that customer success does, how does it catalyze the creation of, and what artifacts that will then get published, or how do the artifacts or outcomes and feedback that a customer success interaction produces, how does that find it back its way into how written or recorded representation of the product or of services happen? So how do you see this ping pong and mutual influencing of each other, especially about docs?
Yeah, it was an interesting relationship. I mean, early days when I was sort of the only, and I discussed with customers how they were getting on with their onboarding, how they were getting to find the tool, how are they interacting with the resources that they're finding online, which is mainly the documentation, and whether that goes positively or negatively. I take those learnings from that touch point, feed that back into wherever it needs to go, I suppose. So if it's a success story, I'd feed that back out to marketing, and they transform that into a video or a link in the documentation to a case study or just straight onto the website for some marketing collateral. And if it was negative as well, that can go to product so that we can fix bugs, we can fix conflicting documentation or confusing documentation, I should say, so that the journey for the customer is much smoother in the future. And same for the community members as well. If it was a more generalized feature of the tool, that could also be applied to the free tier of the tool, which the community would have more of an interest in. And we post out these case studies in our Slack channels, on our Discords, on our community forums, those sort of things, where we can interact more closely with our community. So all of those regular meetings with customers were really vital to fully bolstering the documentation that we were using. And it gave us such a rich access point into the minds of our users. It was really valuable to the community members as well as the customers to have that regular touch point, because it was such a recurring feedback loop. We'd take what the customers had told us, we'd improve things, we'd share that back with the customers, and then share that with the community, and then we'd learn the next thing, and hopefully things got easier. And overall, they did. During my time there, we reduced the time of onboarding down from, it was something ludicrous, like 5 or 6 months previously, down to 5 or 6 weeks, which is still very long, but huge improvement just from improving our documentation and our product to a point where we could make a set template of how customers were going to onboard, using documentation links throughout that journey, and make sure that they had all the resources that they need, as well as our regular touch points to work through those in as efficient a manner as possible. So big improvements were made from that feedback loop over time. yeah, I feel that it grew exponentially as we were building that up. So yeah.
And if I was a technical writer who's responsible for the coherent, cohesive, and overarching documentation of the API or the APIs of company, and I would feel that's all great, but I think we would need somebody who is playing this role of talking with customers to help them to achieve the business outcomes that they mm-hmm. want. How would you recommend to go about it? So this balancing act of learning to dance on the fly, mm-hmm. and how would you set this up if it was a already running ship on the waters, they already have a service or product, and then they decide this is the role that we need. And Charlie, would you set up this process? We have all the usual teams. How would you go about this? And how? Sure. Where would you involve the docs, if at all?
Well, I think data is the key driver in building the process there. So much of customer success can be improved, and it is revitalized or vitalized in the first place, I should say, with rich utilization data from customers. So having access to those various insights and usage tools is really important there. And so once you have the data, then you'd go about setting up a database, which can then give you a bit of an at-a-glance view of how a customer is doing based on those utilization statistics. And you're eventually trying to build up a bit of a health score there so that you can see whether a customer's in the green, in the orange, or in the red. And yeah, the ones in the green, those are the ones you want to learn from, sort of how they are using the tool, how they are interacting with the documentation, and how that feeds back into the product. The orange and the red ones are the ones that really need your attention, your guidance to help increase adoption. And you know, it might point to some issues with things like documentation or misunderstandings about various features, things like that could be made much more clear in the documentation and on the website in the first place. So yeah, you want to make sure that is all set up and ready to go. And then you want to open up some time in your calendar and get talking to people one-on-one and making sure that you can build a decent rapport and build some trust with them so that they can share their challenges and their successes with you and to go and achieve the business outcomes that they want. So yeah, making sure that you have the correct data set up, I think, is absolutely vital to having a good customer success department, for sure.
And if you would do this in a way that you described, so everything works fine, what would your promise be? What do you think, which metrics of the documentation maintenance or writing team, which of their metrics would customer success help with? Where would they see that the changes that they make or the additions that they make based on your advice, that it's indeed helping? Yeah, I mean, support would immediately see that, but would the docs team see it?
I would say that a really good shared metric for a docs team and a customer success team would be customer onboarding time. If a customer can get onboarded within an acceptable margin of time, in our case, it was 5 or 6 weeks, down from 5 to 6 months, obviously tool dependent. If you can work within that shared metric, I think that really does point to a really solid documentation journey that the customer's going through. All of our onboarding, we would share an onboarding project with a lot of customers that would have links to the documentation as they were going through their journey. And so the faster that we made that, that shows that the documentation is easy to navigate. It's easy to understand. The examples are there that they need to. There's templates there that customers can use to get from zero to hello world within 5 minutes, for example. That was one of our key goals, was that initial setup would take 5 minutes. Obviously, it would take much longer to work with the rest of the stack. But yeah, they could get something going and producing some output within 5 minutes. So yeah, I would say that the onboarding journey is a really good metric to share between the two teams.
Mm-hmm. And if I ask the same question about sales, veering off a little bit from API docs topics, but I'm interested.
Yeah, the renewals metrics there are going to be the key shared metric, I would say. How many customers go from or just run down their contract versus how many renew for another year or another 2 years or something like that. It's quite an extraordinary cost, actually, that acquiring a new customer costs 5 times more than the cost of keeping a current customer. And so I would say that if sales have identified from some of the feedback that customer success has given them, if they've identified what the ideal customer profile looks like, because I'm quite often working with a variety of different teams, I would have some intuition on what sort of team structure works with onboarding tools more effectively or faster, and what size of company this works best for, what industries they might be in. If I can feed that information back to sales and they can make more sales off the back of that, and then conversely, I get to keep those sales on board for another year, I think those sort of different that recurring loop there makes for a really great synergy personally.
And if I connect these three dots, if I may ask, I'm really taking sure. you to the weeds now. So for sales, it's really great to see that renewals are happening. Now, mm-hmm. the docs team would say time to from A to B is shorter or less mm-hmm. staccato because of the feedback that you brought us from customers. Now, how can I connect this? So if I'm a documentarian and I know that renewal is a goal, what mm-hmm. can I ask from customer success to help me with the docs, not just to shorten onboarding, but to help renewals? Can customer success fish this information out for me? What is needed? What information can I serve in what way and when to help with this renewal? It's not necessarily technical writing anymore, or definitely not, say more like marketing copy, but in small companies, things flow a bit into each other.
A lot of our renewals in my previous company were very much based on how quickly they got going with the tool. If they got going really quickly and were seeing value at an earlier point in their first year, for example, then they would more likely renew than not. If we had customers that were, you know, taking that 5 to 6 months, then it became a lot more difficult. So with the importance of the sort of first few weeks with the tool, I would say that documentation writers, if they have a variety of different case studies, they're written in a variety of different languages, and you know, ready to slot into a variety of different tech stacks, that makes a huge difference to my job, because it makes the customer on board quicker, and I'm not just sort of fighting with different stages of onboarding, but I'm actually getting to get down into the nitty-gritties of using the tool and to make sure that they are seeing value. It's not just that they can use the tool, they are actually getting value out of their purchase as well and seeing a return on their initial investment. That's the really important thing for my teams there. Yeah, so anything that documentation writers can do to improve that initial journey makes a huge difference further down the line, because then we get into the really fun stuff where the customer's using the tool to its fullest potential. They're seeing scenarios where they didn't originally think that the tool would apply to, but now that they're set up and comfortable with it, they can apply it to that. They can scale out to different teams and different departments. There's a lot of different benefits that come with that initial speed. Because if they're not seeing that 5 or 6 months in, they're starting to question it. If they're not seeing it 8 or 9 months in, then they're really thinking, oh, this has been a waste of time and money. So the sooner that we can get them seeing the initial value, the sooner that we can get them seeing the unexpected value as well.
I don't know if you're willing to answer the following question, but have you seen more like dead ends activities in customer success? And if you can link that to docs a little bit, that is just, you're doing a lot, but it's simply not worth the effort.
There was numerous examples where I think the difficulties of having a small team kind of, our ambitions were wide, but our capabilities at the time were probably not up to that level. And a lot of that sort of, I keep coming back to onboarding, because that was where we found most of our difficulties in, was with this initial stage. And so, for example, we would have a customer that would like an example for GitLab rather than GitHub. They'd like to see a setup example for that. We would try and go away and write an example for that, but the team was too stretched as it was, and that example kept sitting there for quite some time. And like I said, that delayed the initial value proposition, and it made working with that customer so much difficult, because they couldn't get past that point of not having the example that they needed to apply to that particular moment in time. And eventually we only managed to get that customer onboarded with a couple of months of their contract left. And by that stage, it was too late. They hadn't rolled it out to the amount of teams that they wanted to. They hadn't brought it to scale the way that they imagined they would in the first in their initial discussions with our team. We lost a customer that way, which I was very saddened to hear. But it was a very valuable learning experience. It sort of fed back into the ideal customer profile that we were looking to build there with that particular customer. We were working with only one person in DevOps who was in charge of the entire setup operation. They were a small team as well. They were trying to fix their own problems and build their own products. And it was a difficult time for both teams, I suppose. And we took a lot of learning from that. And so, you know, we made sure that it's not just a case of can the customer afford the product, it's do you actually have the resources? And I mean that more than financial. Do you have the headcount? Do you have the capabilities and the time within the team to get the setup, to get the tool set up in the appropriate way?
What could you do differently? So if you got back in time, same situation, same customer request, same setup, same resources, what do you think you could do differently to not to delay something?
Yeah, I think that would be fighting for the customer priorities. I guess making the case of that time to value more strongly and getting the resources that I needed to accomplish that for the customer sooner on in their life cycle than we could focus on, or that we did focus on at the time. If I'm completely honest, I would have recommended that sales actually don't talk to these guys until about 2 or 3 years' time as well, because they also did not have the resources to, despite that one example that I've mentioned there, they also didn't have the resources to be able to put the time in. I think even if we did provide that example for them in that particular instance. So, having known more that a one-man band can't implement this tool effectively, I would have recommended that maybe we just we leave the discussions with that customer until they are in a better place to take on quite the task that implementing this tool proved to be for them. I think that's what I would do.
I do see some gotchas also, that you talk with the individual customer and have to understand their use case well. But then what the customer says they want at that point in time, that might be very unique to them. And even though the job is to bring these needs back into product development, if that goes that far, or maybe just some adjustments or narrative or pointers. But then I guess that there is such an intermediate size where you do see some patterns, but they are not so statistically significant because two customers said that, but not four. Do we need this? Do we not need this? Do we segue into the building this? Do we not? Do we follow what the customer needs, therefore not delaying their renewal? Or do we build what we think? It's a hard decisions overall.
Yes, I agree. And I actually believe in a startup environment that some level of churn, probably more than usual, is good for a business, because the learnings that it offers you in terms of how you build the product and you build your documentation, you build your various processes within all the departments, I think it really adds a lot of value because it stings at the time, and ultimately you don't forget what stings you like that. And I think most businesses, if you were to offer them, you know, you lose one customer, but you gain five more from the experience and from the improvements that you make for it, every business would take that deal, I believe. It's not that you should protect every customer at any cost that you have to pay for that. I think some level of churn is acceptable in those environments. And because of the increased cost of attracting new customers rather than keeping them, that, you know, you have to keep the majority of them. That's certainly an important part of the process there. But I think that the learnings that you can get from those difficult customers and from those ones that don't work out in the end, I do think will benefit the business as a whole, provided you can keep enough customers around to keep it a viable business situation at the very least.
And what kind of situation are you going into now? You recently started customer success manager.
Yeah, customer success manager at CAE Technology. We are a Cisco reseller ultimately, but we also work with some other partners, or we are a partner of some other big firms as well. But we do IT infrastructure, that mainly revolves around networking and security, a bit of data center work as well, and a bit of collaboration tools as well. It's a really interesting company. I'm only a couple of months in at this stage, and it's been very training heavy so far. I've done a lot of courses and a lot of certifications in my first little months, but I'm learning who my first customers are already, and I'll be meeting them for the first time as soon as I've finished my final big qualification, which I'm hoping to do very soon. We work with some of the biggest public and private names in the UK, really happy to be working for them.
You're very excited about this.
Yeah, I really am. I still maintain a very good relationship with a lot of the people at my previous company, and a lot of them said, you know, look for a bigger company when you go for your next thing, because that'll really benefit learning the practice of customer success and working with more established customers and working within an environment which has far more data to play with than at my previous one, where things were just sort of getting set up and things were kind of a bit all over the place, and it was all
two very different games.
I take much more of an opportunity to soak in and learn and from a lot of different colleagues in a lot of different departments, and forge those relationships again. Despite the increase in size at my company, I work in the CX department, customer experience department, and that's a very new organization within the business. So I'm finding myself actually applying a lot of the skills that I used in my previous role to this one as well, just at a much bigger scale. Again, creating various process documents and setting up different relationships with various teams so that we can provide them with what they need and they can provide us with what we need to help get the customer the most value out of what they're buying. And it's a really exciting time. I'm glad for the new challenge, but I'm also glad that there's a bit of familiar ground in terms of the building work that needs doing to get going with as well. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Veering back to my original question as a last question, if I am a documentarian in a company and the customer success department is shaping up now, it's a new thing, I'm already busy as usual doing my own things and trying to make the user experience of the documentation better every day, what can I reach out to customer success with? What can I help me with? What can I ask directly that isn't a bother for them? Because, you know, solve your own problems. What can they tell me?
The most valuable bit I think that we can do is provide that real experience of what the customer is going through and how they navigate through the documentation to get set up. You know, is the customer getting stuck at a certain point in their life cycle or their onboarding or their wider adoption? Is our team members understanding how to use the tool, and not just the practical usage of it, but is it giving them the value that they need to see out of using tools? And I think that deeper insight into the user journey through documentation and through adoption of a technology is really important. It's important for both sides to know how that journey goes and to know that journey in detail so that they can make the path as smooth as possible. You can't build a road without knowing where it's going to go. I think that knowing a customer is at a certain point and they're wanting to get from that point to, you know, the promised land, we want to make sure that roadway is all paved and nice and smooth for them. So finding out what they're going to have to do to take that journey is... it should be really valuable to both sides. And having the customer success, having that sort of regular touch point, if it's on a weekly or a monthly basis with customers, is so valuable. Then I would say potentially gets more into the detail than maybe an evangelist might, where they put something out there and it goes to the masses, and there's this overwhelming wave of feedback to deal with as a result. And whereas I believe the more concentrated touch points and picking up patterns from those really detailed stories that the customer is going through would really provide value to a documentarian.
Yeah, definitely. Because then you can't say, oh, yes, just statistics, but that's not the opinion I care about. No, you care about your customer's opinion.
Sure. And it creates a story between those that have actually made the commitment to purchase it as well versus those who are maybe just observing and having a look, because you know what the person is going through who has made that commitment, and ultimately that's where you want as many people to get to as possible. So having that regular touch point is super valuable to ensure that more people can do that, I think.
Very enlightening. Thank you, Charlie, for willing to go into it and spell it out if someone doesn't know yet how to play with their customer success colleague. I hope that this was very helpful. And I wish you a lot of joy and curiosity in this role that you're now taking on.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. That's, very much appreciated. And really enjoyed this, and hope it was useful for those listening as well.
And see you soon at some of the conferences.
I hope so. Yeah, see you soon.
Bye, Charlie. Thank you.
Bye, Laura.
Thank you for listening to the API The Docs podcast. We thank our colleagues at Pronovis Developer Portals for letting us work on this, and the entire API community for all of the mutual support and sharing of experiences that you give each other. Do you have a topic or guest that you would like us to spotlight? Drop a note at podcast@pronovix.com. If you go to the website apithedocs.org, you can find the recaps and recordings of past API The Docs conferences, as well as the upcoming program. Until next time, be well.